Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
This episode is brought to you by CharlottesGotALot.com. The Queen City is a food lover's paradise and hosts hundreds of incredible events throughout the year, including the International Symposium on Bread. Plan your trip at CharlottesGotALot.com.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. It's HRN's 10th anniversary and now our summer fun drive. So show your support for independent, revolutionary, entertaining food radio by becoming a monthly recurring donor. HRN is powered by a passionate community of thoughtful eaters, and we need each and every one of you to show your support so that we can keep bringing you your favorite food podcasts. It takes a village, and every dollar donated, every listener tuning in is essential to our continued success. So set up a donation for $10 every month. You'll show us that you want to be a part of a bright future for HRN. And you'll get one of our brand new limited edition Pizza Pocket t-shirts. So snag your new favorite tea and show us some love, all for the price of about two fancy lattes each month. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today. And thank you.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Elena Santigade, and my guest today is Charles Duke, Managing Director, North America for the French Dairy Board. Established in 1973, the French Dairy Board represents milk producers and dairy processors and promotes French dairy products around the world. For the past 5 years, Charles has been leading their efforts in the Americas through PR events, consumer pop-up stores, in-store demos, social media, and a website. Pretty much all the fun stuff. Charles, welcome to Cutting the Curd.
Thank you, Elena. Thanks for having me.
So I want to maybe highlight for our listeners who aren't that familiar with the French Dairy Board, how would you describe it? I gave a little intro there, but what exactly does the Dairy Board do, and what is your charge in your role for North America?
Well, the Dairy Board represents the entire French dairy industry in France. Mm-hmm. So they represent the milk producers, the cooperatives, and the companies that transform milk into the dairy products that we see at the supermarkets, at the stores, etc. So all the entire industry depends on them for various levels of research, marketing, pricing, things like that. So, you know, it's really an industry-wide association that helps each other out.
Okay. So every link in the supply chain, and not just advocacy or community, it sounds like it's some nuts and bolts in terms setting things up on a... Do they even do some sort of trade agreement kind of involvement?
Not a government agency. It's a private agency, and all the different links in the system pay dues, let's say, to participate, and that money is being used for various research and marketing and education, awareness, things like that. So They're not involved in the actual trade policies, but they do influence them.
Okay, great. Interesting. It's sort of, you know, here in the U.S., we've got the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin as a good example of like a statewide marketing organization, and sounds like, I mean, it's pretty wild to have one for the whole country.
Right. This would be more like Dairy Farmers of America.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Strong.
But we have, here in the States, we have associations that are only statewide.
Regional,
and they're pretty big. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, very interesting. And so then what is your goal in your role with the French Dairy Board?
So my role is to manage our campaigns here in the Americas, so North America, Latin America. Mm-hmm. I've been with them now for 5.5 years. I've been working with them for the past 10, 12 years already.
Oh, okay.
And we have campaigns to raise awareness on French cheese, cream, and butter, mm-hmm. depending on the market.
Okay.
And my job is to manage our own campaigns and also EU-funded campaigns where we receive up to 80% of the total budget from the EU.
Okay, to help so outside us, of France.
Outside of France, yeah, mm-hmm. to help us raise awareness on certain topics, which could be things like how Europe treats its, animal welfare and sustainability issues, or we can talk about geographical indications and PDOs, and so there's a lot to talk about, mm-hmm. And then obviously just the products that are produced in France and are exported to mm-hmm. All over the world.
Speaking of those products, listeners, today throughout our show, we are going to be pausing to eat cheese, which I was saying ahead of the show. It's sort of silly that I don't do this every week. So this might kick off a weekly cheese tasting right here on air. But Charles has brought an incredible little picnic, which I assume are your picnic picks of French cheese for the season, for the year.
Every cheese is my pick for this season. We have a number of hard cheeses, blue cheeses, soft ripened, some wash rinds, crackers, fruit, etc. So I brought you a little bit of everything for mm-hmm. you to enjoy.
Well, I'm digging in. What's this first cheese that I'm trying?
I'd say it's Emmental. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Emmental is...
That's what it tastes like.
Yeah, Emmental is a nice, easy to use cheese. It's mm-hmm. one of these cheeses that you can snack on, you can slice and use on sandwiches. The French buy a lot of it already grated for pasta and mm-hmm. other salads, for instance. So it's one of these easy cheeses that goes with everything. It's originally from Eastern France, uh-huh. but now most of it is being produced in Brittany, believe it or not.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And this is like, has a very Swissy flavor. There's
right.
the Swiss Emmentaler, and then we have French Emmental.
Correct.
Am I saying that right?
That's correct.
Okay, got it. And in Brittany, that's also where good chicken comes from, isn't that right?
Yeah,
I
also.
Think so.
Yeah. Some of our Le Bel Rouge chicken, which mm-hmm. is very famous.
Yeah. Well, there's always great food to be had in any region in France.
Yes.
So, okay, back to the idea of what you're doing and what the French Dairy Board is representing. I'm curious to hear a little bit about, in terms of the many things that you're kind of educating people on, those, the many topics that you could go toward, you mentioned PDOs, you mentioned, the products themselves. Here in the U.S., what would you say has been a topic that you've seen sort of like the biggest success on in terms of like consumer understanding or what people's perceptions were beforehand and then how a campaign has gone and how maybe you feel like you've changed perception or influenced it at least?
Well, I think that the entire cheese industry has grown so much in the past 20 years. Cheese right now is, mm-hmm. It continues to be the number one product on the list of specialty foods, and it mm-hmm. has been for a very long time. And the entire category has risen because not only do we import great cheeses from different countries, but we also have started to craft great artisanal cheeses as
right.
well. I'll be at the American Cheese Society next
week. Oh, me too. I'll see you there.
And so the entire category grows, and I think that not only the French, but the other EU-producing countries, as well as the Americans, have all risen the standards. And as consumers, we've become much more educated and are interested in this in cheese. Mm-hmm. I just read actually yesterday that we're now at 23 pounds of cheese per capita, which is not bad.
Yeah.
So it's something that has, you know, that we're interested in eating, that Americans are incorporating in their diets, mm-hmm. which is pretty much the message that we're trying to communicate in our campaigns, is how can we incorporate French cheese anytime, anywhere, and really elevate recipes, American recipes, and bring them to, you know, to a couple of notches higher, and make them magnifique, which is the tagline of our campaign here in the U.S., mm-hmm. which is a Cheeses of Europe, the EU-funded campaign, uh-huh. is take any recipe and add French cheese and make it magnifique.
Well, I think that's a pretty good equation. Yeah. I'm not going to argue with that one. Very, very interesting. So when you're designing your campaigns, how does that work? What goes into designing?
Well, it's a long process. Uh-huh. It's a long process that starts with crafting a grant request that is submitted to the EU, mm-hmm. Either before or after. We also launch an RFP to look for an agency that's willing to manage the campaign. So we launch an RFP, we get different marketing agencies that respond to it.
So you're asking people, what are your ideas? How would you do this campaign?
Exactly.
How badly
we obviously
do you
give
want
them
the work?
We give them guidelines.
Information, yeah.
And then they respond with a pretty hefty campaign that includes, you know, like we mentioned earlier, PR.
Right.
Different components that make up these campaigns. And then the French companies that are here in the U.S., they vote on the campaign that best suits them, that they feel would be the best return on the investment. So that's how it works.
Okay. And you mentioned the French companies here in the U.S.
Yeah.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, all of the French companies that we represent have representation here in the U.S.
I see.
So
okay.
They have sales teams. And
got it. Yeah. So they're U.S.-based sales teams say, we want this type of campaign, and we think that the consumer could benefit from this other type.
Right. So let's say we're going to choose a couple of agencies. The agencies are going to present it to the French companies, and they'll decide
who wins the
award,
the
contract. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And what are some recent campaigns and your current campaign?
Well, our current campaign is now 2 years in.
And this is the Magnifique.
One is called Secrets de Fromage.
Okay.
Secrets de Fromage. And the one before that was called Make It Magnifique.
Okay.
But we've continued that tagline just to kind of allow the consumer to put two and two together. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of we prolongated that tagline in order to
leading
make it more
it
familiar
the next one.
For the consumer.
Okay.
But before that, you know, we were doing a lot of Cheeses of France campaigns, which were not EU-funded. Mm-hmm. And so now we call them Cheeses of Europe because we depend on the EU for the additional financing.
Got it.
Which is substantial.
Okay. Yeah. And then are you representing cheeses that aren't French for that?
No, not really, no.
But there's the take on it is that in representing French cheese, you're benefiting the EU cheese industry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Europe, you know, since it is European money, where we need to talk about Europe in general. At the same time, since we're also paying part of the campaign as the French Dairy Board, we're promoting our own companies and our own cheeses.
Okay. Got it. Okay. So then my next question is sort of beyond the scope of the U.S. How often are you personally traveling to other countries in the area, and what campaigns do you have going on right now outside of the U.S.?
So I travel quite a bit. I have a campaign right now. I have campaigns in Mexico, in Colombia, in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And I've launched
some fun places to visit.
And I've launched an RFP for a campaign that's going to include Brazil, Argentina, and Chile. So I'm waiting for the response from in October. Mm-hmm. So that's another one that might come to fruition soon.
Okay.
And in each country, there's an agency that runs a campaign locally. Mm-hmm. In the Spanish-speaking countries, it's called Quesos de Europa. Mm-hmm. And in Portuguese and Brazil, it would be Quesos de Europa, which is the campaign there. But the premise is more or less always the same, which mm-hmm. is to raise awareness on these cheeses, to explain to people how they can consume them, how to incorporate them into their diet. Mm-hmm. And we try to use local ingredients, local recipes, local drinks, local pairings that people are familiar with to make these cheeses less more accessible, let's say.
Right. And with that, like those local partnerships, how does that work? Is that something that's usually happening on the agency side, or when you travel these countries, are you helping to make those connections and highlight those local products?
Well, the beginning is always the same. It's still an RFP, and then the agencies get chosen by the local French companies that are representing the products there. Mm-hmm. Then the message is fine-tuned, let's say, with my presence there in the company, in the countries. And I also go down there when I do. We do events, and I try to speak and promote during, festivals, promotions at supermarkets, PR events, things like that.
Interesting. So what would you say is a common, or maybe just a recent kind of scenario that you feel like, where you felt like, you really brought something new to a region that wasn't used to it? Like if you're talking about adding cheese into cuisine, is there a certain type of recipe or a certain way to do that that has been kind of eye-opening in a different region from your point of view?
Well, here in the U.S., I think something as simple as mac and cheese can be really elevated with French cheese. Mm-hmm. Mac and mimolette has become a staple now for many. In Latin America, I think in Colombia and Mexico, which are both cheese-consuming countries, their cheeses are very mild.
Right, fresher cheese. I mean, as we get closer to the equator, I think of fresher cheeses or brined cheeses.
Exactly.
Stuff that doesn't really need aging, right?
Correct. It's not aged at all. So for them to taste a brie that's maybe 3 months, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. They taste it and they just can't believe the flavor and the texture and whatnot. So those are things that are, funny for me to see that I think Americans consider a brie to be a mild cheese today, but for them it's still a very strong cheese. So to incorporate that into their diets is challenging, but luckily, they've tried. More and more people are traveling. There's a growing middle class in those countries that have experienced these cheeses outside of their country, and so they're looking for them at home.
Mm-hmm. Yum. Now that you mentioned brie, I'm going to take my next bite of cheese as we cut for a break here. So we'll be back in just a moment with more from my guest, Charles Duke of the French Dairy Board.
This episode is brought to you by CharlotteScottALot.com. The Queen City is a food lover's paradise and hosts to hundreds of incredible events throughout the year, including the International Symposium on Bread at Johnson & Wales University. HRN went to this year's symposium to learn about the science, history, and art of bread making. Here's what visitors had to say about the symposium.
I love the geeky science stuff.
Great food. Love the Armenian pizza.
How much I'm eating
and consuming the carbs.
The most interesting thing is just the community.
For me, it's the science of starters.
So much information.
Very inspiring so far because everybody has a different outlook.
I'm not technically a breadhead, but I think I'm going to be one after being here.
So whether you're a breadhead or just a curious mind, check out HRN on Tour for coverage of Charlotte's International Symposium on Bread and an insider's look into Charlotte's food scene. Don't miss our interview with Peter Reinhardt and Kristen Moore to learn more about where to eat on your next trip to Charlotte, a city on the rise. Learn more at charlottesgotalot.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm Elena Santigade, and I'm here with Charles Duke, and I also have a mouthful of cheese because I'm eating cheese in the studio today with Charles of the French Dairy Board. I just had a taste of a lovely sheep's milk cheese called Napoleon. Folks, keep an eye out for this one. Looks like it's a natural rind, delicious.
It's like
harder.
An Ossau-Iraty.
Yeah, long-aged, very, very good. Okay, so now that we've sort of covered what the French Dairy Board is all about and what you're focusing on in different areas on this side of the world, I'm curious to hear a little bit more about you, Charles, and your journey to this role, because this is like, you're like captaining this cheese ship from France, which is pretty wild and fun, and I'm always curious how, was your eye always on a cheese job, or have you just landed into this like many of us do by happenstance and a love of the product?
Well, I think I landed in the food industry by happenstance. I lived in France for a while, came back. Mm-hmm. And when I came back, I was looking for a job where I can keep using my French. And I did always love food. So it kind of was a, you know, gift sent from heaven. But my first job was at Petrosian Caviar, which is a French company.
You know, in terms of specialty food, I'm not going to complain about having a little sales fridge full of foie gras and caviar.
Smoked salmon, caviar. Only the best. So at the time, it was a long time ago. I'm not going to go into how long ago, but
we'll
it was a long time.
That up to
yes, to the listeners. And so I started working there because the director at the time didn't speak French, and so she needed someone to speak French and help her communicate with head office.
Okay.
So I started working there, and that kind of gave me the first taste to the specialty food industry. And I was very lucky to continue mine, to be able to speak French, which I had learned in high school.
Okay.
In New Jersey.
Just regular high school
just
French
Just regular
class.
High school.
And then when did you live in France? Was that like after you're done with school?
Right. So it was after a year of college, I went to finish over there in France at the American University.
Okay.
And as I was living there, had some part-time jobs, et cetera, learned about a lot of the... of the cheese, but the cheese came much later.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So fast forward back to the caviar.
So come back
to
New York,
salmon.
Start working at Petrosian. Then I started working for other import-export companies in the food industry still.
And were you doing sales at that point, or what was
your
role?
I was doing sales, yes. I was doing sales. At Petrosian, I was doing, I evolved to do sales both for high-end restaurants here in the city and also for big accounts, big department stores around the country that had them. That sold the products.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was lucky enough at the time to meet, you know, a lot of the big chefs that are now even bigger. But
they were up and coming
chefs, Daniel Ballou and co, you know, used to bring him his caviar. And that's how it all started.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
And I think the big break with the cheese came when I was the director for the food department. The agricultural department at the at Business France, which is the commercial arm of the French embassy, so the French Trade Commission.
Okay.
And I worked there for 5.5 years and led that department along with all of our other offices around the country, and there we helped around 500 different food companies to come into the U.S. to work with importers, distributors, and get their product out on the market.
So really helping to link food producers from France into the supply chain in the United States market.
Exactly.
That was that role.
Exactly. Wow. And at that time, I meet the people from the French Dairy Board, and I help them, you know, put in place the very first campaigns that they had, which are, you know, funded by them, as Jesus of France, and accompanied buyers and importers to France for various trips to visit production facilities all over the country. And that really gave me a lot of insight into how the industry worked. And and I probably know, you know, France better than some of my French friends, because I've been to places in the middle of nowhere.
Right, you know, rural France.
Rural France with at the time, you know, great importers and great buyers from all over the country that I still see regularly at the shows.
Hmm. So as you made your way toward cheese and you got deeper into the cheese part of the specialty food world, I'm curious if you have any impressions on like how the cheese industry differs from other areas of the specialty food industry. I ask questions like this because I'm curious. It's almost like when you're so deep in something, you lose a sense of how it compares to other things. Mm. But do you have any thoughts about what you, as you got into it, things that were surprising to you or what you found to be unique to the cheese industry?
Well, I would say a sense of community. And I think that we all help each other out. There's really, even though there are different companies and there is a sense of, there's a sense of helping everybody out, of sharing production ideas and not secrets, but
right. things that could be considered proprietary or
could
or
be considered.
Things in a more cutthroat industry, maybe like not, you wouldn't be so quick to share.
Exactly. And that's something that I was very surprised with this, within this industry, is that we're all getting along. We all share ideas. We are all working for the same goal. We all have a common enemy, which...
I'm not going to go into that. Tell me more about that.
And so, you know, there's a lot of issues with raw milk, I think, with plant-based beverages. You know, so there's a lot of issues and I think challenges that we all face together. And we're all facing these things together. And that's what it's what's special about this industry.
Right. Do you find, just on that idea of our shared challenges, do you find that there's a lot of two-way communication in terms of what's normal, quote-unquote, in France, equipment-wise and inspection-wise, and what French cheesemakers are expecting versus the realities of bringing cheese to the United States and kind of jumping through the hoops here?
I think that the entire chain of production in France is at a very high level, and security is very high. Everything is checked and double-checked at every stage of production. So I don't feel that we've arrived at that point here in the U.S., so that's something we should be working on to get to that level. And then as far as getting here, I think it's funny sometimes where, you know, the FDA comes up with these rules and regulations where France has been overachieving and still we're put through all these hoops here to bring these wonderful products to the U.S.
Hmm. Yeah, it's very tricky. Okay, I'm ready for my next bite of cheese.
Okay.
And now I'm going to go for the blue.
Okay.
But should I... Here, hand me one of these utensils. Yes. Now, listeners, I say the word utensils, but don't worry. I'm not eating the cheese with a fork. I'm just cutting it with a knife. Because I believe in eating cheese with your hands, right?
As I do.
Especially in a summertime picnic, you know, you don't want to worry about too many things. Just grab the cheese and eat it.
Grab the cheese. If you want a little support, maybe a light cracker.
Right. I like to use a cracker as a vehicle, a little bread as a vehicle, then a palate cleanser.
Right.
Okay, so what am I tasting?
You're tasting Bleu d'Auvergne.
The Bleu d'Auvergne.
Which is a wonderful blue cheese from central France, you know, from the Auvergne region, a very volcanic region at one point.
Yes.
So it has a very, very good pasture land.
Unique soil.
Yes.
I'm sort of on a never-ending quest to find wines from the Auvergne because of that volcanic soil, which I know most of them were wiped out with the big, what was it? I'm going to blank on the wine word. Listeners, this is a chance for you to tweet at us at Cutting the Curd with the name of the infestation that killed all the wine in the Auvergne.
The vines, yeah.
Botrytis? No.
Oh, Matt, our producer came in with it. Botrytis.
Botrytis, yes.
Bingo. Wah-wah.
Thank you.
That was amazing. That felt so legitimate. That felt just like, what a podcast. So anyway, I'm on the hunt for great wine from the Auvergne, which doesn't really exist anymore. Although I've had one or two that have been fabulous by newer winemakers who are trying to do stuff. But my whole reason for saying this is the reason that I'm hunting for it is because I love the cheese so much from that region. And is what other cheeses are from the Auvergne? Is Solaire's an Auvergne cheese? I believe it is.
I believe it is. Le d'Auvergne and Fomme d'Ambert. Yeah.
Smaller format.
Exactly.
Cute little taller cylinder.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Bleu d'Auvergne is a shorter and wider cheese.
Wider, yes.
Right. Both are so delicious. So how has your cheese life changed? How has cheese's role in your life changed as you have worked professionally in cheese? Are you eating cheese every day? What is your actual cheese reality? I'm always curious about that.
Well, I'm very lucky to be surrounded by cheese on a daily basis because, as many of our listeners may know, we have a space called the French Cheese Board in New York, in Soho. And that space caters to a lot of our events that we do here in New York.
And is that basically your HQ when you're in town?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of things there. I don't have an office there because it's a small space, but it's very interactive. It's a beautiful space that we use for the media and media mm-hmm. outreach.
Yeah, so I've been to a few events there.
Oh, great.
It's always great.
So yeah, I'm surrounded by cheese, and I do eat it often, and I love it.
What's the most recent recipe that you cooked with cheese in it?
Well, you know, this for the past few weeks, we've been doing the Tour de France.
Oh.
We've been following the Tour de France at the store. And every day, the team there puts together little recipes and gives out samples of cheese mm-hmm. of that stage in the Tour de France.
Oh, so which region they're going through,
exactly.
The cheese of the region. I love that.
Yeah, so that just ended, as you know, yesterday. Mm-hmm. But they did some melted raclette the other day, which mm-hmm. was delicious. Yeah.
Always a great choice. Yeah. Even in the height of summer, I want melted raclette. Yeah.
French always find that strange that we eat raclette in the middle of summer, but hey.
You know. There's not a bad time for it.
Right.
Really, really not. So my other question is about how much you're traveling and what percentage of your time is spent traveling. And do you have a team that you're traveling with, or is it really you going solo to work with the agencies around the world?
I travel often with my manager who's in France. So mm-hmm. he comes and I meet him at these different locations, and then we have the support of all our agencies and our PR people at each city. Mm-hmm. So I would say I travel, you know, maybe 2 weeks out of the month.
Okay, you know. So about 50% of the time.
Yeah.
Is that a lot or is that not a lot?
You know, I really like it because I like to be able to change offices, mm-hmm. quote unquote.
Right.
So having an office today in New York and having an office tomorrow in Sao Paulo, and in another week I'll be, you know, in Bogota or Mexico City. It's great to be able to see something new, to talk about, you know, the things we love, but with new people and new mm-hmm. ears, and just see it in a new perspective.
Yeah, it kind of breathes a fresh energy
exactly.
in
every
a constant
time.
Way,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Do you have any tricks for traveling, like having a traveling office, essentially? Like, do you use any apps, any technology that, like, you couldn't live without? Or do you have a bag you're totally in love with? I feel like when I was a salesperson, these are the little, like, secrets that you end up sharing with other salespeople over, like, drinks at a conference. So I'm curious if you have any must-haves.
Well, you know, traveling comfortably, Advil PM is my friend when I travel very, very long distances mm-hmm. because I usually I have to work the following morning, so I have to arrive operational. And, you know, my Delta app, which is
that's
important.
That's interesting, yeah.
And,
make sure your tickets are all organized.
Make sure everything's organized. And just having an internet connection is always essential.
Do you do a hotspot on your phone?
I don't, no. Oh. But I have.
Yeah. I find that's crucial. Yeah. Even just here in New York.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, where's the internet?
Exactly. Yeah.
Very, very fun. Okay, well, let's try one more cheese. I'm going to reach for the brighter orange cheese, which is not Mimolette. Listeners, if you thought I was going to say Mimolette, it is not. This is, I'm told, a pimento cheese.
Exactly. It's called Tom Pimento.
Tom Pimento.
Pimento. And it is with espalette peppers.
Mm. So
it is a Basque.
Like Southern Basque.
Exactly. It is a Basque
region.
Cheese. It is from the same region that does Osso Irati. Mm-hmm. And so you have this wonderful semi-soft cheese, I would say, with a pale orange color and a little bit of spice to it.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah. It's really... I have a high tolerance for spice, so I'm sometimes not the best person to tell somebody if something's spicy or not. But what I love about it is you can really taste the flavor of the espalette.
Yes.
And espalette pepper, I think, is one of the most delicious peppers.
It is.
And so I'm getting like a little bit of a tingle, but nothing too intense. This is very pleasurable.
It's very nice. It's new. Mm. And, you know, France is always innovating and finding new cheeses. There's approximately 1,200 cheeses in France right now, and the number's always growing.
Mm-hmm. Wow. 1,200 cheeses.
Yes.
That's incredible. Well, on that note, listeners, just let that number sit in your psyche for a moment. 1,200 different cheeses of France. And I am going to now eat more of them. as we wrap up the show. Charles, thank you so much for joining me on air.
Thank you, my pleasure.
This was really fun. Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode. And we'd love to know, what are your favorite French cheeses? Let us know on Twitter and Instagram at Cutting the Curd, or shoot us an email at cuttingthecurd@heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week with more Cutting the Curd.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.